Part 2, The Kings. And so it was that Balthazar the king set out in deep midwinter from his land, leaving it frozen, leaving his people lost, leaving his life behind to heed his star and seek the child king it heralded. He would have gathered all his royal guard, have decked them out in crimson and in gold, ordered the horses braided and shod with silver and trunks of treasure lashed upon their backs. He would have journeyed forth from his dear land with drummers at his flanks and trumpeters to sound his regal coming to the valley. The people would have lined the city streets, the guard before his great chariot, pushing through the massive throngs poured out from hills and shop fronts to catch a glimpse of the spectacle of his caravan. Such was the way a king would travel, such the reveling his station warranted. But not to be, for this strange errand with its midnight calm, its softly glowing guide. So, in the stilling night, the king made ready one gray mule. One glance upon the mountains at the farthest edge of sight, black teeth bursting through the valley's frozen floor, was all the wise man needed to pass his steed of royal breeding, swifter than the moon, and white as to vanish against the wintry world, but sure of footing only in the pastures of the valley, or the cobbled streets about the city, never venturing up the stony notch paths winding through the mountains. Upon his sturdy work mule, Balthazar lashed tight with ropes a chest of heavy oak, filled up with food and cloaks and barley corn for her that bore the weight upon her back. And in one corner of the great oak chest, he gently laid a box of rosewood made, with gold inlay and velvet soft and black as starless midnight lining the inside, a soft bed for the incense laid therein, as fine a gift as any Balthazar could think to give a king of kings, perfume of heady frankincense, to bathe the babe in heavenly aroma, marking him a gift. Wrapped carefully in finest silk and locked up with a tiny silver key, the rosewood nestled safely in the corner of the heavy oaken chest, and with a rough-cast brass key, fogged with age, the king shut tight the chest upon the gray mule's back and hung the two keys close about his neck beneath his traveling cloak. And so the king stepped out into the night, into the streets, cloaked tight in shadows. And bending back his head and looking up, he saw the highest tower, its gaping silhouette against the sky. And in the chamber window stood a figure, black, against the chamber's deeper black, keeping vigil just as he had done, that no despairing woman, child, or man might look up for some small morsel of reassurance and be denied. And turning quick their backs against the sight, the mule and Balthazar began their journey to the mountains in the west and far beyond. For three long nights the white road led them on, white and crusted over with old snow, unmarred by marks of travelers before, and scarred with marks of heavy boot and hoof behind. Three lonely days the king laid out his camp and waited for the cold sun's light to die, revealing in the dark his bright companion beckoning him on. The third day died, and as night rose, the mountains overhead cast craggy shadows down on Balthazar, great demons speeding eastward over the fields of his sad land. The king looked up upon the winding way that led into the rock, and nighttime swallowing the road behind, he led his gray mule up the treacherous slope. No more could he go on in straight pursuit of his beloved star, for mountain peaks would often hide its light from view, or else his path would twist and writhe among ravines and cliffs and boulders vast and perilous, taking him off course and on again. And as his patient mule and he did climb, the wind blew, whistling warnings in the crags, and stars began to vanish in the north. But still the king pressed on and met the wind with a defiant song, the sound of his own voice among the rocks, a reassurance.